You're listening to First Words, a podcast where creativity, career, and kids collide. We're your hosts, Jasmine Aluma.
And I'm Casey Gates Fry. Just a heads up, this episode deals with postpartum depression and graphic descriptions of intrusive thoughts.
Our guest today is Katie Lovejoy. Katie is a screenwriter, a poet, and a mother. She is the writer of the Netflix film To All the Boys, Always and Forever, and continues to keep busy with several feature and TV projects in development.
I think that if I had a chance to spend one more night with my mom, I would take it.
Yeah, but it's different, LJ. Your mom didn't leave you. Not by choice. I'm not saying it's easier. You think of your mom and you miss her, right? I think about my dad and I hate him. And I miss him. And then I hate that I miss him. There's nothing worse than not feeling chosen.
I choose you, Peter Kavinsky.
Katie and I met several years ago through my husband, Dan. They came up through USC together, along with Katie's husband, Rue, who has been Dan's writing partner for several years. With Katie and I both being writers ourselves, plus sharing a love-hate relationship with The Bachelor, we became fast friends.
First, we're going to start by asking about what it was like when you found out you were pregnant.
Sure. So I knew that I wanted to have kids, but every time I would get close to the finish line or get close to trying, I would chicken out and I would kind of back away and say, well, I have something else I want to achieve in my career first, whatever. I, in my classic A student form, when I was trying to decide about having kids, I had tried to reach out to a few working mothers that I knew, and I'd talked to a mentor who'd worked, who said this thing that I thought was really beautiful, that was the greatest study of the human condition is to have a child. And that really resonated for me. And so that was when I was like, okay, yeah, I want to do this. But then I would chicken out. And so we were in France and we were staying with this beautiful family. Both the mother and father had worked while the kids were growing up. Their children are now Rue's age and they had children, a little 5 and a little 3-year-old named Louis and Sasha. And it was just this warm home with all of these long French meals, and the little boys didn't speak very much English, but they, you know, drew us pictures that we took home with us. And after we stayed with them, I said to Rue, I was like, okay, I'm ready. Let's do this. And then we got back to LA and like 2 months later, the pandemic began. And I didn't want to get pregnant during the pandemic. So I said to Rue, like, we should stop. You know, there was all those stories about moms that were having to give birth alone in New York. Their partner wasn't even allowed in the delivery room with them. That just felt like a nightmare to me. So I put the brakes on again, but my body did not get the memo. I was, you know, late for my period, which I usually wasn't. And I took this pregnancy test. Rue wasn't even home. He was walking the dog and he came back in and I just stepped out into the hallway and put my hand on my hip and I was like, I'm fucking pregnant. And he was like, what? And I was like, I'm fucking pregnant. And he was like, great. And I like dropped to the ground and burst into tears just because I was so scared about doing it in the pandemic. So I was caught very off guard. I definitely panicked. I was very scared. Just had this moment where I was thinking about how after a forest fire, there's these sprigs of life that come out of the blackened earth, just like these bright shoots of green grass. And it's just life, the life force prevailing even after destruction and death. And I just really felt like that's what this pregnancy was. And that did ultimately inspire what our son's name is. So I came around on it, but I would say I think that initial shock and then the anxiety of the pandemic, which persisted all the way through the pregnancy, and actually our son's birthday was the peak of all COVID hospitalizations and deaths in LA County. It was in January of 2021. It's when COVID patients were in the gift shop in the hospital. That really put just a pall over the whole pregnancy. And then I later learned my hormonal postpartum depression symptoms actually started when I was pregnant. And I think it got missed and I didn't really, nobody flagged it for me because I had fewer wellness appointments. Some of them were digital. We were always going in masked. Everyone was stressed. You were trying to get in and out as fast as possible. I think that if it had not been the pandemic, my symptoms would have been caught a lot sooner. What my experience was when I first found out and then how that, I think, shadow was cast over the pregnancy as a whole, in part because I'm such a planner, type A person. And I remember I said to Rue in the first week that I'd found out I was pregnant, because he was excited and he was like, am I allowed to be excited? Is that okay? Do you want to do this? And I was like, no, I want to do it. I want to go through with this pregnancy, but I just feel like if you were going to craft a horror movie version of my life, it would be getting accidentally pregnant in the middle of a once in a generation pandemic. And I remember he said to me, or that's the comedy version of your life. And I was like, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet, dude. That's the horror movie version for me right now.
Can you tell us what was your creative professional life like during your pregnancy as you were growing pregnant, but also still working and creating?
Yeah. Many years ago now, I went through something called the Showrunner Training Program. It's run by the Writers Guild of America. I had applied multiple times and been rejected, but I did eventually get chosen for it. I was selected while I was making a pilot for the CW called Dead Inside. And it's an 8-week program, and they bring in a bunch of showrunners to come in and talk about different and line producers and all these different people to kind of talk to you about what the job is like. And I met another writer in that class who I love, who's a comedy writer. And she basically, every time I saw her during that and afterwards, she asked me, are you pregnant yet? And it was because she had started as an actress and then transitioned into writing and producing, and she had two kids, and she felt that there was a lot of pressure, career pressure on women who want to have children. And she, I think at that time, felt it even more because she was still on screen. She said two things. There's never a good time to have a kid, which means there's never a bad time either. And the other was babies are good luck. And both of those things actually turned out to be true for me. I sold two pieces of development, got hired on a revision of an old script that I'd written a long time ago, and had a movie go into production while I was pregnant. So it was a very busy time. But I will say that there was a career opportunity that was gathering momentum for me before I found out I was pregnant that ended up going away because of the pregnancy, just for reasons that are not really worth getting into. But that was really challenging because one of my big fears of having a kid was that it would have these negative impacts on my career. But ultimately, again, it ended up being for the best, and that opportunity will present itself again when the timing is more right. I did have pretty unrealistic expectations about how much I would be able to work at my usual capacity while I was pregnant. I was very sick in my first trimester. I had to do a thing that I've never had to do in my career, which is I had to tell employers and producers that I was not going to deliver material on time. Part of my ambition has always been an emotional survival mechanism. It's kind of been like my avenue to independence and a real source of strength and identity. And I had this idea that I was going to become a mom and it wasn't going to change me. And that expectation or goal, I think, created a lot of suffering for me. If being pregnant is like climbing a roller coaster and then you get to the top and then you have a baby and you're just in free fall, you have two options. You can throw your hands in the air and have a good time and just go like, I'm on a ride and I have no control. This is crazy. Or you can like hang on for dear life. And that's definitely what I did from the beginning through really until I started to feel better. And the thing that's ironic about it is as soon as I started asking people for support, I got it. Like, people were totally lovely about it. I think I'm lucky because I was very established in my career when those things were happening. I think if I was a younger writer, that would have been much more difficult to turn around and say, like, hey, you took a risk on me to do this assignment. Now I'm not going to deliver it when I said I was going to. So I want to acknowledge that for maybe some people who are listening who are not as secure in their career as I was when these things were happening. But I also do think that we're given a lot of messages that it's going to end our lives and end our careers. And there are definitely people that you can work with that will treat you that way. I was in my maternity leave and I got this call from this person that was like, hey, I want you to come and do this job and be in this situation, whatever. I'm trying to keep it as vague as possible. But I remember saying to him, like, oh, I'm not available. I actually just had a baby. And he was like, oh, really? And I remember just thinking, wow, you're an asshole and an outlier. Like, that's not how everyone else reacted. My producers, my studio, and my network on one of my pilots that I was working on, when I told them, they were great. They were like, oh my God, we're having a baby. You know what I mean? They were awesome about it. So I would say the people that are going to punish you for making a personal choice are not people that you want to be working with. And I know that not everybody gets to be picky. And so I want to acknowledge that reality. But I will also just say, like, my experience has been that the world is changing and that there is an acknowledgement that parenthood makes you a better artist. I remember when I was in the showrunner training program, every showrunner who came, who was a parent, basically said the best training for being a showrunner was being a parent, because you're always multitasking. You never really have time to do anything. You're always distracted. You're always managing all these different personalities. You know, I was really anxious and put off having a kid for a very long time compared to when I actually was ready to start emotionally doing that as a family. And I think if I hadn't gotten pregnant when I did, and there wasn't a little bit of kismet to it, I would have kept putting it off. I would have always had a reason to say, well, this isn't the moment. This opportunity is in front of me. This might happen. This might happen. You know, I think that I could have missed out on one of the greatest journeys and experiences of my life. My career felt really solid, but still vulnerable. And I think basically, no matter where you are in your career, we're trained to think that having a kid and becoming a mother is going to take away our competitive advantage, because we're not going to be able to work all the hours or sacrifice our whole lives to the work. But that reality of having something else that you care about actually makes you a better writer and a better artist. And I have found that becoming a parent has definitely enriched and made me a more complete person, writer, human than I was before.
So what was your creative life like after your son was born? And what was that process of continuing to create and work afterwards like?
Yeah, so I tried to go back to work too fast. That was well-intentioned. But again, I think it was coming from a very anxious place of, who am I if I'm not doing this thing? Being a career woman has been such a cornerstone of my identity that, you know, the idea of taking more than 2 months, which is what I originally said I was going to take, was totally unfathomable to me. If I was going to do it again, if I have a second child, if my producers ever listen to this, they'll kill me. But my plan is to take at least 4 months. And there's a few reasons for that. I mean, I had an uncomplicated labor and I still felt, it just felt like it took me a long time to physically recover. Maybe it's because I'm 35. Maybe if I'd had my son when I was 28, it would have felt different. But I'm still trying to heal an ab separation and he's 16 months old. I tried to go back to work too fast, and that created a situation where I wasn't getting any joy out of parenting and I wasn't getting any joy out of writing either. In fairness, there's a big context, which is my postpartum depression hit at 8 weeks. And around that time, we had to evacuate for a fire in the Palisades. It was kind of near where we live, and my in-laws were staying at an Airbnb near us. So we all evacuated to my parents' 3-bed, 2-bed bath ranch house in the valley. And I remember we evacuated on a Saturday, and Tuesday morning I looked at Rue and I was like, I am this close to having a nervous breakdown. Like, I'm not going to be okay. And he was like, I got the baby. You just take care of you. Like, I'll take care. I'll bring him to breastfeed and you just take care of you. But I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to take care of myself if I wasn't just writing. That's always the way that I've taken care of my difficult emotions in my life, is I've just focused on my work. So I really felt like I didn't know how to regulate. And I didn't. I really didn't. And I was so dysregulated because of the hormones and the postpartum depression. I think I, by trying to come back too fast, I made the transition into working much more painful than I think it needed to be. You know, when you have postpartum depression, in the beginning, managing it really is a full, like, it's, it takes everything. You know, I was doing personal therapy twice a week. I was in a postpartum depression support group, which was hugely beneficial. Even though I resisted it in the beginning, I was like, I don't need group therapy. I totally did. It was awesome. Those women really helped save me. So yeah, I would say the transition back into working was really messy and really ugly, and kind of confirmed all of my fears that this thing that I'd done was going to ruin my career or ruin this part of my life that was important to me. And I just kind of had to work through those feelings. And once I got on medication for the hormonal part of the depression and started doing some more, yeah, I would say deeper therapeutic work than I'd done before to try to understand why I felt so threatened when I wasn't working. Just my like entire identity was felt so at risk when I wasn't doing this thing that I'd been doing since I was a kid. Then I was able to really start to put my heart and soul back into the work. And I happened to be writing a project that is a mother-daughter relationship. And I actually came up with the idea for this show many, many years ago, long before the idea of being a mother was ever even in my mind. I wanted to write it because I've always had a very complicated relationship with my mother. And I wanted to see that reflected in media. I didn't feel like there were a lot of examples of mother-daughter relationships on TV that felt honest to me. I hadn't been able to sell it because of where I was at in my career and what the just appetites of the industry were at the time. And this project kind of came back to life while I was pregnant, and I actually sold it when I was pregnant. And I was not able to deliver the material before my son was born. And so I came back into it, not just a daughter, but now also a mother. And it completely changed the way that I approached the material. Like, I think that if I'd written that script before I'd become a mother, the mom character would have been pretty villainous. And it would have really become the teenage daughter's hero's journey. And the best version of the show has always been a two-hander. It's really a journey for both of them. And I was only able to do that and bring that level of, I think, depth and nuance to that character of the mother in the show because I had grown a child. I had gone through labor. I had fed him from my body. It helped me understand why this character that I was creating would be unhealthily attached to her daughter in a way that I wouldn't have been able to just fundamentally understand without doing it myself. And so that felt like just the fates sort of answering the question for me. Like, it just so happened that that thing, that project came back to life during the pregnancy. That was the project that I went back to after maternity leave. Once I got back into that project, I was like much more able to settle in back into my creative life and my career with a sense of stability as opposed to anxiety.
Looking back, Katie knew that she was at risk for postpartum depression, but she didn't know what to look for. So it took months for her to recognize that something wasn't right.
I'd never changed a diaper. I'd never held a baby. I didn't know anything about swaddling, nothing. And we left the hospital and went home, and nobody crossed the threshold of our house for the first 8 weeks of our son's life. Nobody should do it that way. It's just what we had to do. And we told ourselves that we would be okay because we like froze 3 weeks worth of meals in our deep freezer But we just, it's what we had to do because of the time that there were no vaccines yet. The cases were crazy. It's just what we had to do. But it was a major contributor. There's a reason people say it takes a village. And I remember when my parents and my in-laws got their first vaccine, like 2 weeks later, once the immunity had kicked in, we allowed them to come and mask. And I remember handing my mom the baby and just being like, oh my God, she knows what to do. Like somebody in my life actually knew what to do, and they weren't available to me for these months. So I knew all those things, but I think there's a few reasons I didn't know it was happening. It started when I was pregnant. And then after my son was born, I felt amazing. I was just in this honeymoon period. I just was like, I love this baby. I love breastfeeding. Breastfeeding was very easy for us, which is very just not universal. There's this whole idea that breastfeeding is natural. It's not. Mom and baby have to learn how to do it. But I just felt, I don't know, you know, Rue and I had this chalkboard that was sitting on our dresser where we were, you know, doing, we were marking down like when the last time he ate and how many diapers he'd had. And it just felt like it was us against the world. And it was just, it was pretty magical for the first, really the first 3 weeks. And then because of Rue and Dan's work situation, Rue went back to working part-time at 3 weeks. And that was really hard for me because then I was totally alone with a baby for many hours. And I never wanted to be that. I was scared to be that. And yeah, actually, when I think about it, so one of the telltale signs of postpartum depression that I've since learned is what they call intrusive thoughts, where you have these very vivid visions of terrible things happening to you or your baby, or in my case, also Rue. I was very anxious once I had a baby. I felt very vulnerable. And so I would be really nervous about something terrible happening to Rue and it just being me and the baby and not knowing what to do. And so I remember the very first intrusive thought I had was like 6 days after we got home, the Santa Ana winds were really high and I kept envisioning like a branch breaking through the roof and killing all of us. And not like the kind of way where you're like, oh, that was a crazy thought. And then you brush it away. It's like it sticks in your mind and you kind of you ruminate on it and you really vividly imagine it. And I'd never, you know, I'd had anxiety, but never like that before. And if I'd known ahead of time that that was one of the telltale signs, I would have immediately seen somebody. But I didn't know. I just didn't know. And then I remember a couple weeks later, I had an incident where my son was in the like little baby Bjorn bouncer, which everyone should have. And I had cut myself a piece of bread and I was carrying the cutting board to the sink with the knife on it. And I wasn't even close to him, but I just had this vision of, oh my God, what if the knife slipped off and it landed in his soft spot? And I just couldn't get that out of my head to the place where I would not touch a knife if he was in the same room with me. And so that was the thing that I really didn't know. Was just like a universal marker that this is beginning to happen. And it was shortly after that that some of the deep depression began to hit. And I remember going in for my 6 week appointment with the OB and I felt great. And then like 2 weeks later, I felt like I just fell off a cliff. While I do think that we've made great strides as a society in trying to make women aware that this is a thing, like I said before, we don't really educate them on what it actually looks like. And the entire idea that after you have a baby, you just need 1 6-week wellness appointment and then you're cool is crazy. Like we should be checking up on women, I think, every 3 weeks until like 6 months is out. I think we should have the level of prenatal appointments for postnatal, because there's a great book called The Fourth Trimester that's all about the changes that your body goes through in the first 3 months postpartum. I remember in the book reading this one tidbit, because I just managed to read a couple sections. When you're not pregnant, your uterus produces all your hormones. As soon as you get pregnant, the placenta takes over and you end up producing 200 times. I forget which one it is. I think it's progesterone. You end up producing 200 times the level of progesterone that you do when you're not pregnant. And then the moment you have a baby, it plummets to below normal levels, to menopausal levels. So it's just this insane hormonal roller coaster. And, you know, it's no wonder that the baby blues, postpartum depression, these things happen. But I think there's a real failure to continue checking up on women. I will say once I did start to worry that there was something going on when I reached out to my OB, they immediately got me connected with people. They had great response once I finally figured out it was happening. But I don't think that the burden should be on women to figure out what's happening. And I, like I said, I do think that part of the reason it got missed was because of the pandemic. And my friends weren't coming over and holding the baby. I used to make this joke. I think I even said it to you, Casey, of if a woman becomes a mother and no one's there to see it, did it even happen? And I really felt that way. I just felt like, yeah, I was just like alone and on this mountain with this kid. And he and I were both like, he's figuring out how to be a human. I'm figuring out how to be a new kind of human. And I just felt really lost and really scared and really alone. And I wish that I'd been able to get help sooner because I missed out on a lot of things that I didn't have to because I was so whacked and emotional and lost. I just really felt like the thing that I would say to Rue, and this was especially hard for me, somebody who'd always been in control of, you know, felt really in control of my life, felt really capable, resilient, strong, stoic, independent woman, you know? And I just said to him, I was like, I feel like I'm lost in the middle of the ocean and I can't see land and I just have no idea which way I'm supposed to swim. And I'm afraid that if I swim the wrong way, I'm going to drown. And that's how I felt for months. I just felt so lost. What nobody tells you about becoming a mother is that you grow an ocean inside you only to break it. Waves deliver a fresh soul ashore, slick like a seal, and for a brief moment, all is still. You lay there, spent, a castaway at sea, unsure which way to swim, until a cry calls you to land. So I got on medication around 6 months postpartum, because once I figured out there was something wrong, there's traffic with everything in LA, so it took a while to get an appointment with a psychiatrist. My psychiatrist also does therapy, which is very rare. She's amazing. I feel so lucky to have found her. And I'd had a therapist forever, but that I needed somebody else. I needed somebody who really knew this specific thing because it is very specific. And they're starting to talk about matrescence, which is this whole idea that, similar to adolescence, becoming a mother is a huge identity shift and a hormonal shift. I got on medication around 6 months. It takes a few weeks to kick in. Then it takes a little while longer to find the right dose. So I would say around 9 months is when I started to feel not insane. And I will say I had a lot of resistance to going on medication. I was really scared to go on the medication. I had this idea that I didn't want to be on something that was going to alter my brain chemistry. And I remember the psychiatrist saying to me, like, everything that we take alters our chemistry. That's what medication is. And if you had a heart problem and your heart doctor said you need to take this medication for your heart, you wouldn't hesitate, would you? And also the group therapy that I was in, all of the mothers who had postpartum depression who were on medication said that before they got on the medication, they didn't feel like themselves. And that really resonated for me. I just didn't recognize my mind. I just didn't feel like myself. It honestly wasn't until I fully weaned breastfeeding at 13 months that I realized how much those hormones were still affecting me. Like, I really actually feel like the new me in a way that I think I was still struggling to find that. I think the idea that I wanted to get back to who I was before having a child was part of what made the transition so hard for me. I needed to recognize, like, okay, there's parts of me that of who I was before that I'm going to reclaim, but I have to integrate those into the person that I am now because I am different. I am changed. You know, I get to the weekends, I don't want to work. I want to hang out with my kid. I want to go have an adventure. I want to see him put his feet in the sand. There's different parts of me now. And so I had to learn how to accept the those new parts and welcome them in to the council of elders that are that sit in my brain. So it was the combination of therapy, but then I think the medication, the therapy, but then really the turning point for me was weaning. I really felt like I fully came out of the fog just a couple months ago. But I really started to feel better once I got on the medication and we got to the right dose.
What kind of role has writing played for you in relation to your postpartum depression and anxiety?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I feel like my career writing has always been one of the ways that I've managed being anxious. I just stay busy and I do my work and I disappear into it and I don't think about my problems. That's not really the place that I'm in anymore. I'm trying much more to sit in my feelings when I have them, to make space for them, to listen to them. One of the things that I've learned in the therapeutic work that I've been doing, which has been primarily a type of therapy called internal family systems, which has just been life-changing and is fairly new, I think, in the therapeutic world, is when you try to ignore parts of yourself, they get really loud. So I still have that part of me. I still have the part that's like, type A, hits my deadlines, does the stuff, boss lady, like gonna run a show, might direct someday. Like I still have all those pieces. But the part that came up that really actually helped me survive postpartum depression was I started writing poetry, which I'd done when I was like an angsty teenager. So I think there's a funny, an irony to that when we were just talking about matrescence and adolescence. Like I wrote poetry as an adolescent and then I started writing poetry again in matrescence. And the first poem or two that I wrote wasn't to manage the depression. It was in kind of that magical honeymoon period that I was talking about where I just felt amazing right after my son was born. I wrote a couple like really whimsical, really sunny poems. So I've put them into a collection that I'm calling The After, and I'm continuing to write them as they come along. I feel like writing in my career is like chipping away at clay, you're like kind of always shaping it. But with poetry, I feel like you catch a poem. It like you snatch it out of the air. So I haven't caught one in a while, actually. It's been a little while since I've written one. But I wrote a lot of poetry about the depression and the way that I was feeling. Some are more oblique than others. Some I think are more honest. And you can kind of see my, like when you read them as a piece, so far, you can like see when the depression hit, and then you can see me kind of bargaining with it and trying to talk it away or understand it in an intellectual way, make sense of it. And then finally, what I think is the best poem of the ones that I've written, which I wrote in October of last year, so about 10 months, I had started to feel a little better. And then we'd done an outing and my son had cried the entire ride home. He didn't nap in the car, which was the first time that had happened. And being trapped in a car with him when he was crying was always really hard for me. And so that had felt like such a huge setback. And I fell into another like deep pit of depression for a couple weeks after that. And that was the one that I felt was the most honest. It was the hardest for me to write. It was the most emotional for me to write. It was the most emotional. I remember when I shared it with Rue, it made him very emotional. How are you? Fine. Unraveling. I'm afraid I've ruined my life. Can I say that to you? He's perfect, though. I know. A good baby with a bad mother. I fell into a hole so black it swallowed the sun. My son. He kicks his feet when he's happy. I wish I was happy. Thoughts clatter around my mind like loose change in a jar. Penny for your thoughts. Am I talking too much? He smiles with his teeth like his father. I miss my life without him. Can't live without him. I'm a wreck, marooned by the choices I've made. I've never felt so alone. I'm never alone. He claps now. I love him more than my own shadow. Sometimes I plot my escape. He turns in circles on his butt, delighted by the cupboards. I want to hide in one. Does that make sense? No. I can see it in your eyes. You didn't really ask. You were just being polite. Sorry. He's a good baby. I'm his mother. I'm fine. How are you? One of the things that I think is really hard about it, about postpartum depression, is it's hard to explain to other people how you're feeling. And people are like aware that it's a thing and that you're probably like sad sometimes. they don't really understand kind of the torturous emotional landscape that you're navigating. It just, yeah, poetry really helped me a lot. It's been this really interesting part of my creative soul in life that I didn't even know that I was yearning for, which was to write just for the joy of writing, not for work. Not that I don't find joy in my work. It's just different. I think the other thing that's been so magical about it for me is that, you guys know, it's very hard to get dedicated time to do anything. And screenplay writing or pilot writing or whatever, novel writing, those are all very long journeys. And like, you can write a poem in a day. You can write a poem in an evening. You can think about it for a couple of days and then put it on paper. And it's very finite, and you can kind of have this sense of completion. I do have a poem that I've been trying to crack since my son turned one, that I haven't been able to crack. So it's not like they're all that way, but I think that just different way of using my words and my mind, and there was just this different part of my creative world as a writer that kind of unlocked or opened in that period. Like I said, I don't really know what I'm going to do with them. They're kind of like a time capsule for me to understand where I was, what was happening for me, how I was feeling. And because I've dated all of them, I remember what was going on in my life at that time and can see how I was working through whatever that was. It's kind of like watching somebody try to heal on the page. I'm certain that I'll continue writing pieces through this parenting journey. I thought like, well, maybe when my son turns 18, I'll hand him this random collection of poems. I can't imagine that he'll really care. But right now I'm just doing it for me. And it's been so helpful. It's been such a healing part of my postpartum journey.
How has writing impacted your parenting?
I think so. There's this concept that's come up for me in my therapeutic work that's called rupture and repair. Which I think is also a concept that people talk about with parenting a lot, which is like ruptures happen. The important thing is how you repair. And I think that because I'm a writer, when I lay down in bed at night and I think about things of how the day went, I inevitably like want to rewrite parts of how I interacted with the day or things that I said to my husband or my son or to myself. And so I've made a practice where when that comes up, the next morning, I'll, you know, and my son doesn't understand yet, really, but I'll just say to him, like, you know, this thing happened yesterday. I really didn't like the way that I responded to you. I just wanted to say I'm sorry. And if I could have a do-over, this is what I wish I'd done. And I feel like that's an example of the writer in me kind of going like, I wish that I could give a rewrite on how that went. The goal can't be to never have ruptures. The goal is to make sure they're always repaired. And so I think that that's an example of how my creative life, I think, helps me be a better parent, just because I get to do a rewrite the next day.
You've talked about kind of putting your working life at the forefront of your identity and your priorities a lot in your past and early career. So I'm kind of curious, where does your relationship fall with that now as a parent?
I think that right now I'm just trying to find what work-life balance looks like for me. And I think one of my litmus tests is I think a lot of my career has been me trying to meet other people's expectations, wanting to keep my working partners happy, be the A student who turns things in on time. And I still have that part of me, but I think I have a healthy balance to that now that's like, yeah, I wanted to finish this act this week, but it's Friday and it's my weekend with my kid. And I didn't see him very much this week because I was working. So I'm going to hang out with him and I'm not going to work this weekend. And that doesn't feel hard. That's not a hard choice to make. I feel like one of the best examples of this is I used to hate brunch. Like, people would love brunch on the weekends and I would always hate it. And it's because it's like in the late morning, which is a really random time to meet up. And it always ends up going for like 2 hours because it's busy and you like have a drink and you get home and you feel or you have a coffee or you eat too much or whatever. And you get home and you just you like feel lethargic and you want to take a nap. And I say that now, I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. That's what brunch is. But I used to hate that because I wanted to be productive on the weekends. And I didn't understand, like, it'd be so much better to have a meet up with a friend in the evening after the Saturday workday is over. And now one of my favorite things to do is have brunch with my husband and my son on the weekend because, like, it's leisurely. It's, you know, my son loves to eat. He gets to walk around. He waves at people, you know. Brunch has become my favorite ritual of the weekend. And I feel like that's the perfect example of how becoming a mom has changed me, but for the better. I think the part of me that was like, fuck brunch, like kind of sucked. Like, oh, what 4 hours of work was I doing in that window that was so important that I couldn't go and have a, like a, make a good memory with somebody. I think I'm trying to just be more present in all areas of my life and not use my work as a thing that I can escape parts of my life that are being challenging. It feels much healthier. I feel like I have a way healthier relationship with my work than I used to. And I feel like the quality of work that I'm doing is so much better that I don't need to be working for as many hours as I felt like I needed to in the past. I'm still trying to find kind of like, what is the new, you know, if boss lady or like showrunner, writer, or whatever was the identity that I was really hooking on to that felt really strong. I don't really know what the answer is now. And like I said, I've been like flirting with working mother, but there's a lot of baggage that comes with that title that I reject societally. So I'm trying to find it. Writing mom. I don't know. I'm trying to find it. I feel like when you're a parent, you just need to embrace how your life, your space, everything in your life gets a little bit messier. One of my walls currently has red crayon on it because my son like heard me say, oh, we shouldn't let him draw on the wall. We need to make sure he understands not to draw on the wall. And then promptly went and drew on the wall and then felt guilty about it and asked for a towel so he could clean it up. It was very cute. I've thought about not removing it as just like a reminder. Like right there in the middle of our wall in the living room, like that's the reminder of what life is actually supposed to be, is like red crayons on a white wall. That's actually what is the good stuff in life. And I think that I was so busy trying to bury my head in the sand of my career, I really used that to as like a shortcut for other parts of my life that maybe weren't working for me as well. And now I'm really trying as much as possible to just go like, yeah, it's messy. It's messy and it's chaotic and it's like dishes in the sink and it's crayon on the walls and it's unfolded laundry and it's unfinished screenplays and scenes that I used to never end a day with a scene unfinished. I would just work until the scene was finished. And now like I have to end the day when a scene is unfinished because 5 o'clock is when I go and I spend time with my son. And somebody said to me that when you have a kid, you start living in real time. Like before you have children, you can take 10 minutes to finish your scene. But when you have a kid, like if you wait 10 minutes for them, like if you miss their nap by 10 minutes, like those 10 minutes are going to suck. Like if they're hungry, they don't have 10 minutes to give you. That used to be really hard for me. But now I'm like, yeah, I didn't finish that scene. Oh, well, no use crying over red crayons and unfinished scenes. But I'll get back to you when I know what the new identity is. I'll let you know.
What were your son's first words?
Yes, which he said zhuzh in the beginning. Then it became da and then yeah. But yes was one of his first words. Mama, dada. Lemon was one of his first words. I can't explain it. And Dio for quesadilla.
What was the first thing you said when you saw your son?
He's so beautiful. Mm. He was so beautiful. So that's what I said first.
What are the first words of your current project?
I have a book that I want to write someday. And the first sentence is, her shoulders were too narrow to carry the weight of the world on them.
All right, this is going to be a word association. So what is the first word that comes to mind when I say inspire?
Creativity.
Nature.
Nurture.
Family.
Love.
Change.
Vital.
Hope.
Fear.
Obstacle.
Growth.
Message.
Forgiveness.
Beautiful.
You've been listening to First Words. You can find out more info on this episode's guest and the show on our website, firstwordspodcast.com. If this show resonated with you, please share it with other writer parents in your life. We're in this together. First Words is recorded, edited, and co-produced by James Hilmer.